This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. It has been more than 2 weeks since pro-democracy protests in Egypt captured the world's attention. And now, crowds are gathered in Tahrir Square waiting for President Hosni Mubarak to address the country. Anticipation has reached a fever pitch in Cairo. There are conflicting reports today that Mubarak may give protesters their wish and step down from the presidency. We'll hear updates from Cairo this hour, and we'll also talk about what a possible resignation would mean for Egypt's neighbors and allies. First, joining us now by phone from Cairo is NPR foreign correspondent Soraya Sarhadi Nelson. Thanks for joining us, Soraya.
Sure.
So over the more than 2 weeks that you have been covering this unfolding revolution, if you can call it that, how does this moment feel different from all the rest?
The anticipation is truly at an all-time high. Everyone's waiting now for Mr. Mubarak to make his statement, although it's important to note that the protesters don't necessarily trust that he's going to say what they want him to say, which, of course, is that he's leaving, and, in fact, that the ruling party is going to be sharing or power and not just sort of switching around the chairs like sort of a musical chair game.
We have seen V for Victory signs. We've heard cheering and shouting. What's the atmosphere like there?
People are singing and they're saying, hang on, we're almost there. And I mean, it's just, they're really, really anticipating this statement. And I think they're really hoping that this will be the end. I mean, everyone is getting somewhat tired, even though they are hanging on and they've built a tent city and you know, are living under tarps and just sort of, you know, trying to make sure that they get what they want here. But I mean, truly on all sides, people would like life to get back to normal here.
You say people really want to get what they want. Is it enough for President Mubarak to say that he is stepping down? He already said that he wouldn't run for re-election. What specifically do the protesters need to hear?
They need to hear that the ruling National Democratic Party is not going to be keeping its stranglehold over the authorities in this country. At this stage, they don't trust the vice president, the new vice president, either. They feel he's sort of part and parcel of the same group that's been in charge here for 30 years, you know, that he's too closely aligned to President Mubarak. So they just want to know that there really is going to be change. And they're actually willing to let the army, I mean, they're hoping the army will sort of oversee this, this transitional period, if you will.
Describe how the protesters feel about the army. What role does the army play to them?
Well, the army was sort of the relief from the police that were so much trying to suppress this movement from the beginning. And it's been a fairly positive relationship all around. I mean, the protesters have ridden around on tanks and APCs. They've put graffiti actually on the tanks and have been allowed to. And it's been, with a few exceptions, it's been pretty much a very relaxed relationship, if you will. There's a strong history in this country of the people liking and respecting the army, although there are many in this movement who also question if there, in fact, is a real military coup, whether that would necessarily lead to democracy.
Coup obviously has very negative connotations. Is that what the protesters are looking for? Is that what they want?
Well, I don't. They certainly don't want it in the traditional sense. They don't want a repeat of 1952. I mean, they want something that's going to, or some sort of transition that's going to allow democracy to actually come to Egypt. But what they're looking for is an honest broker, and they're hoping perhaps that the army will oversee this transition as an honest broker, but sort of from a back seat, if you will, not necessarily taking the wheel, but sort of just making sure that the people who are going to be in charge for the next few months until there are elections are actually going to make sure that democracy takes place here.
All right, that's Soraya Sarhadi Nelson speaking with us by phone from Cairo. Thanks, Soraya.
You're welcome, Ari.
And we're continuing to wait for a statement which could come any minute now from Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. We're joined here in the studio by NPR senior editor Lauren Jenkins. Lauren, earlier today, senior military leaders in Egypt announced that they had taken steps to secure the country. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's rather confusing, like everything that's been happening in Egypt. It was immediately seen as a coup by a lot of analysts when they saw the military came out. Look, first, for the first time since this crisis began in the streets 17 days ago, the Supreme Military Council of the Armed Forces met this morning and into the afternoon. without Mubarak, who actually is the commander-in-chief, or his new vice president, Omar Suleiman. They were excluded from this meeting. The army came out with this statement, labeled it communique number one, and said, we're in charge and we're going to see that your wishes are met. For anyone who knows the history of Egypt, communique number one was the communique that Nasser, Gamal Abdel Nasser, issued when his free officers overthrew King Farouk, the monarchy in Egypt, in 1952. So it's made everyone think this is a military coup and they're taking over. Up to now, we don't know, and we won't know really until Mubarak speaks. Just what role they will assume. Are they going to be a caretaker government? Are they pushing him out? Are they staying there? I mean, it's been very confused, and it's swung back and forth all day, sort of the emotions and the thoughts of, you know, what's going to happen.
We heard reports from military officials that he was going to step down. Then we heard a report from an information official close to Mubarak that he was not. Does that suggest that there's still a tug of war going on?
Probably. You know, I think, you know, the information minister is part of Mubarak's entourage, someone who was appointed by Mubarak in that position. He's obviously a loyalist. The army, what everyone's been trying to assess is, where's the army in this? And some days it's looked like the army was defending the regime, and other days it looked like it was defending the protesters.
We're going to bring in another voice now. Joining us on the phone from Cairo is Ahmad Shaheen. He is an associate professor of religion, conflict, and peace building at the University of Notre Dame. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Would describe where you are right now and where you've recently been.
Well, I just landed and I'm on my way to Tahrir Square. And of course, as you can imagine, the traffic is a little bit busy because of the these committees, defense committees, protection committees. They are inspecting cars and so on. So we have to, and also some military units. So we have to, you know, take a longer routes and just, you know, detours and so on.
I hear a lot of adrenaline in your voice.
On Tahrir Square. There are some tanks on the road, of course, blocking, and just they let the cars pass after they inspect them.
I hear a lot of adrenaline in your voice. Describe what this moment means for you.
Well, of course, you know, look, I have been, you know, actually desiring and yearning just, you know, to come and join the protesters, and thank God, you know, I was able to, and I'm looking forward actually to reach. I can't wait to reach to Tahrir Square. I can't, you know, wait to reach Tahrir Square. And as, you know, some people have reported to me, because I have been on the phone with some, you know, family members, the mood is very festive because there are expectations that Mubarak is going to give a speech or a statement, make a statement very soon. So, of course, you know, these are all speculations. People are speculating about what he might be saying. And the speculations range from possibility of delegating, you know, his authority to the military or to Omar Suleiman, or hanging around a little bit longer. We really don't know. But there is some kind of jubilant, festive atmosphere.
You know, from the beginning,
as people report to me.
From the beginning, these protests, the protesters have not fit the typical demographic profile of democracy protesters. And you, as, you know, a professor at a university in the United States of America, don't necessarily fit the freedom fighter, democracy protester profile yourself. Why was it so important to you to be there now and to make your way to Tahrir Square?
Well, I'm Egyptian, of course. I'm Egyptian. And for me, this is, you know, historical moments. These are momentous events that are going to change if things, you know, like unfold the way they should be. And there is, of course, big if here. So these are momentous events that are going to change the political map and structure and social and political life in Egypt. These are the pro-democracy demonstrations. People are, you know, protesting and have been pressuring to get their freedom, to change the regime. These are not, they are not seeking just gradual cosmetic reforms, but are really looking for a new democratic life, clean life, free life.
You know, you said if things unfold the way they should, what is your fear?
The military, of course, and outside powers.
I'm sorry, say that again. Your phone cut off a little bit. Say that again.
Is the military that it will insist on holding on to power. They might do that directly or indirectly. Most probably it will be indirectly through Omar Suleiman and the military-led government Mubarak had instituted a week ago or so. This is one of my concerns. The second concern that this military-led government can split the opposition and co-opt some of them so it can really split the ranks of the opposition and the protest. What I'm concerned about, of course, are the pro-democracy protesters, the youth. And it can really marginalize and isolate them gradually. And, of course, the third concern is the position of the outside world, that they relinquish support for a regime change. They do not support a regime change, but they find it enough only to support change within the regime itself.
I want to bring back in NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins here, who is with us in the studio. And Lauren, as you listen to these concerns from Professor Shaheen, how acute are these fears? How real is the possibility of things going awry?
Oh, this is Egypt. They can certainly go awry at any moment. Look, I actually went as a young reporter to Cairo the day after Sadat was assassinated, when Mubarak came to power as his vice president.
So some 30 years ago.
30 years ago. And I've covered Egypt off and on and watched the Mubarak regime entrench itself more and more and establish a really amazing police state where they controlled everything, allowed no parties, allowed no dissent, no discussion, no freedoms. I think what we're seeing in the streets is this blowing up of, you know, lifting the cloud of fear of the police state. Now, what happens after Mubarak leaves, if indeed he leaves, is up to questions. I mean, the movement is young, youthful, unorganized. There are no real political parties there except for the Muslim Brotherhood, which has been banned. And how they emerge and who comes out on top is anybody's question.
That's NPR's Lauren Jenkins. We also want to thank Ahmad Shaheen, Associate Professor of Religion, Conflict, and Peacebuilding at the University of Notre Dame, who joined us on the phone from Cairo. We are watching events unfold in Egypt this hour, waiting to hear from President Hosni Mubarak. When we come back, we'll talk about the possible repercussions for one of that country's most important neighbors, Israel. We'll be back after a break. You are listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro. From NPR News in Washington, this is special coverage. I'm Ari Shapiro. Anticipation is building in Cairo this hour. Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak is expected to speak at any moment, and there are conflicting reports that he may resign. Egyptians are crowded into Tahrir Square after 17 days of protest, and the atmosphere has been described as electric. Here in Studio 3A, I'm joined by NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins, and we are also joined on the line now by Woodrow Wilson Center scholar Aaron David Miller. He's with us to talk about the possible implications of a Mubarak resignation for Egypt's relationship with Israel. Miller was a former advisor to six secretaries of state on Arab-Israeli negotiations. Welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Egypt has been one of Israel's strongest allies in the Middle East. What changes if President Mubarak loses power?
You know, I think there's so much uncertainty and so much concern and worry, not just in Israel, but among the other Arab autocrats that the U.S. does business with, that it's going to be extremely difficult to sort through this in the next weeks and months. Two realities, though, are unmistakable. Both the Israelis, the Arabs, King Hussein, the Saudis, have got to be looking in their rearview mirror. Because what has happened in the streets of Cairo is really quite extraordinary. Not only has the fundamental bargain that the U.S. made with highly centralized regimes in danger or on the cusp of coming apart, but there's another reality as well, that states that are non-democratic will be looking in the rearview mirror wondering what are the implications and possibilities of political change there. The Israeli concern, I think, is an obvious one. Egypt has remained the strategic pillar of their strategic advantage in this region over the course of the last 30 years. Without Egypt, the expression went, there can be neither peace nor war. The Israelis for 30 years had the first and avoided the second. And while I believe no matter who rules Egypt, or at least within a mainstream arena, no one is going to renounce the treaty, close the canal, sever the relationship with the United States. But the political space that America and, to a lesser extent, Israel enjoyed for the last three decades is going to narrow considerably, regardless of what the outcome is.
And so do Israeli officials and Israeli people believe the chance for peace is slipping out the door with the possible departure of Mubarak?
Well, I think there's a great deal of concern and uncertainty on an issue like Gaza, for example. Will the new Egypt be as diligent as the Egyptians have been in monitoring that border? Will they be as acquiescent to American and Israeli goals with respect to Hamas? Will the new regime support America's efforts to contain Iran? Will it share counterterrorism information and share and cooperate in intelligence collection? All of these things right now are highly uncertain, but I think we really have to understand one basic point, and that's this. What is good for the Egyptian public as they sort through this process of democratic change may not necessarily any longer be good or right for American interests or for Israel.
Well, you mentioned American interests.
Yes.
How do American interests change as this power dynamic shifts?
Well, I identified two or three areas where I think there are potential problems. Containing Iran, Mubarak was adamant on this issue. He was next to Sadat when Khalid Issambouli sprayed them both with machine gun fire. The Iranians went ahead and named an avenue in Tehran after Issambouli. Mubarak never forgot it. I'm not at all confident that the next Egyptian government will be as neuralgic or as allergic to containing Iran as Mubarak has been. And the same issue pertains to all kinds of other aspects of our policy. Democracy promotion is something we believe in theory. We have cut a devil's bargain for more than 30 years with regimes who were sclerotic and frozen in time. That bargain has now come apart in places like Tunisia and Egypt, and it's going to require a recalibration of our own sense of how much space we're going to have to pursue our own interests. One of the key issues is the Egyptian military. The reality is that Egypt has been, is now, a Praetorian state, where the military exercises tremendous control, not only in Egyptian politics and in national security, but in the economy. Tantawi is the minister of war production. The Egyptian military owns farms, it owns collectives, it owns industries. It doesn't pay taxes. It has huge perks and privileges in the Egyptian system. The U.S. has a very close relationship with the Egyptian military. What is going to happen when the new and rising political currents of democratic change no longer want an Egyptian military? They want a civil political governance.
We have another guest here in the studio who can address just that very question. Aaron David Miller, thank you for joining us. Aaron David Miller is a public policy scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center. He joined us from a studio there. Thanks for being on the program.
Pleasure.
And now to NPR's Rachel Martin, our national security correspondent, who is with us here in Studio 3A. So as we were just hearing, the Egyptian military plays a pivotal role here. Let's begin by asking, is this a coup? Is the military forcefully taking over?
Well, I think you can answer that in two ways, yes and no. You know, there are all the trappings of a coup. We've got, as was mentioned earlier, Lauren Jenkins talked a little bit about this. There was a very important meeting where the leaders of the military Supreme Council got together. President Mubarak, explicitly not invited to that meeting.
Nor his vice president.
Exactly. And out of that meeting came a communique, a very important message indicating that this is a new chapter, perhaps, in Egypt's history. So this has all kind of the signs that this might be a military takeover. At the same time, you have no idea what's happening behind closed doors right now. We don't know what kind of negotiations are happening. We're waiting at this very moment to hear President Mubarak speak. But it's worth pointing out that President Mubarak is of the military. He was an Air Force general. He is very closely linked with the top military commanders. And he, in fact, tried to bring some of them onto his side. This whole thing has been a battle of trying to win over the army between the protesters and the Mubarak regime. And very early on, President Mubarak recognized that he was going to have to take some steps to kind of bring the army into his camp. And he did that, you know, by elevating some people. Hussein Tantawi, who is the defense minister, he made him the deputy prime minister. minister. He was trying to inculcate some of these military leaders in hopes of assuaging some of the protesters' concerns.
You know, Rachel, we've been hearing from people who say they hope the military takes charge, and we've also heard from people who say they hope the military doesn't hold on to control. Can you describe where those conflicting feelings come from?
Well, you know, Egypt has a long, very long history, generations of military dictatorship. And as we've all seen, this is a revolution of very young people who are demanding a substantive change. That means they might not be satisfied if Mubarak comes out and says that Omar Suleiman, his vice president, the former chief of the intelligence, is going to take over. That might not be enough for them. At the same time, it really is interesting. The army is known as the people's force. This is a conscription force. Every Egyptian family has someone who has served or knows someone who has served. And as a result, it's a very diverse force. It's dangerous to think of it as a monolith. There are factions within the army itself. There's a generation gap. There are also people who have studied in America. The United States is a very close relationship, the military to military relationship. So it's not clear where the army stands writ large. That's something we're still waiting to see.
Just to give us a sense of this moment in Egypt's historical narrative, Lauren Jenkins, you covered Egypt for many, many years. And as we watch these scenes unfold on television, on CNN, what is this moment? What does it look like in the streets?
Well, I've never seen crowds like this in the streets of Egypt since Nasser died in 1970. And they turned out for his funeral. He was this great nationalist leader, an inspiration to a lot of the Egyptians. He gave them something to be proud of. And they turned out like this. The streets were mobbed for days just for his funeral. There hasn't been anything like that since. When Sadat was assassinated, they buried him almost in private. There was no great funeral or anything like that. There have been bread riots, but they've all been smaller. There have been some riots over the years, but nothing like this. This is a sense of a whole nation feeling freed. And every Egyptian I've talked to is just ecstatic about what's happening. To them, it's a transformative stage. It's moving into a new era. It's, you know, what President Obama said, that we're really witnessing history unfold here.
You know, our colleague Jackie Lydon was telling me that in a group this big with this many people protesting, it just takes one match to ignite a flame and really tip the scales into violence. And it strikes me that we have not seen that. These are crowds that are singing and cheering.
That's what's been extraordinary about these demonstrations. They've been peaceful throughout, except last week on two nights when the government seems to have unleashed its secret police and pro-Mubarak groups who were the violent ones, and they attacked these demonstrators. These demonstrators have remained in the streets for 17 days and have been totally pacific and organized and making sure no one tries to be violent.
Rachel Martin.
Well, and also, you know, you have to think, they recognize that the army is sitting there with big tanks. And these folks understand the power that that institution has in Egypt. And if there were to be some kind of violence, the army would be then put into a position as the keeper of security in the state to intervene. And that would be chaos.
I want to bring Shibli Telhami into this conversation. He's joining us from his home in Maryland. He is the Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Welcome.
My pleasure.
Based on what we know so far, do you think the protesters will be satisfied with whatever we hear from Egyptian President Mubarak today?
Well, if he resigns, for sure. I think, you know, he's become a symbol. I think there's a sense on the streets already. You could feel it just watching the live Arab satellite coverage of the story and hearing people's comments. There's a sense that this today marks an end of an era. There is no doubt. It may not exactly mark the beginning of a new one yet. And obviously there's a lot of apprehension because we don't know what it is. But this is a moment akin, this day will be remembered as a day akin to the coming down of the Berlin Wall. It's that big. You know, Lauren was speaking about the last time he saw these crowds in Egypt in 1970 when Nasser died. And I have to look back at this because recall Nasser became a hero for Egyptians in the 1950s, particularly after the 1956 Suez Crisis. And then he had a little bit of a setback because of a devastating defeat in 1967, just 3 days before he died. But one of the things that happened with all the flaws of Nasser historically and within Egypt and whatever happens, one thing Nasser gave Egypt and gave a lot of Arabs, and that is pride. If you had to look back and say, when was the last time when Arabs, when most Arabs and Egyptians felt proud, I would have to go back to that era. And I think what we were seeing today is a moment that is profoundly important psychologically. I can guarantee you that most Arabs everywhere in Saudi Arabia, in Morocco, not just in Egypt, feel proud today because of this event.
And if I am an autocratic ruler of an Arab state, how worried should I be about what's unfolding in Egypt today?
Terrified. Because it doesn't matter. I know that everyone says my country is different, and there's some truth to that. Every country is different, and certainly Gulf states are different. But if you look back at it and you see two things. Number one is no one obviously thought this could happen in Tunisia, and then even right after Tunisia, the foreign minister of Egypt and others kept saying Egypt is not like Tunisia, and it turns out to be even bigger than Tunisia. I mean, it is more massive, more huge. And frankly, one of the things that we have to understand about this, and it's becoming clearer and clearer as we know something about the organizer and people like Wael Ghanem and hear their story, this was not about food. This was about dignity. This was about pride. This was about humiliation. This was about empowerment. And we have to understand that, obviously, food and poverty have something to do with it because they bear on dignity. But this is much bigger than the issue of food and deprivation at that level. It's about political freedom. It's about a sense of proud. Egyptians have not felt as proud of themselves and of their country and its standing when they go visit Saudi Arabia or go to Dubai or go anywhere. And so in that sense, I think even countries that are better off economically cannot rest comfortably thinking that is a protection against the will of the people.
Professor Talhami, I'd like you to stay on the line, and we're joined here in the studio by NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins. And Lauren, there's a report just now from Al Arabiya, which may or may not be true, that says that the president, Hosni Mubarak, is going to say that he's handing over his authority to his vice president, Omar Suleiman. If that is, in fact, what President Mubarak says, will that satisfy the protesters?
I don't think so. I think they want to see a whole change in regime, and Omar Suleiman is very much a part of the regime. He's a very close crony of Mubarak's, a fellow military man of Mubarak's. He's been his defender. I think they'll want more. They want a change of government. They want a real democracy. They want to participate. They want to see political parties, press freedom, all the things that they're demonstrating for. They want to feel proud and free.
Professor Talhami, I know that you and Lauren Jenkins know each other well, going back decades covering Egypt. Does this take the two of you back to the moment so many decades ago when Egypt was such a different place?
Undoubtedly. I would even say this is bigger than Egypt has ever experienced. I mean, let's think about this for a moment. I mean, the 1950s was extraordinary because, in essence, the Egypt as a nation and its leaders and its military with public support stood up to foreign powers that were disliked, and it was an anti-imperialist mood that swept, and that anti-imperialism is still there in the Middle East. But we have never seen a revolution of this sort, where you have millions of people demonstrate peacefully and bring down a government that everyone assumed is very solid. We've never seen that. I don't think there's any moment in the contemporary history of the Middle East where it's like that. Even the Iranian revolution, that was organized, it was clear, they worked at it for months. This is really extraordinary, and I think it's Bin Laden's nightmare, and we have to keep that in mind. This is the anti-Bin Laden. This is the empowerment that brings down the very regimes that Bin Laden was trying to bring down in exactly the opposite method. It's totally non-ideological. It's totally peaceful. And so in that sense, I'm in awe of what we are witnessing right now. This is, in historical perspective, this is going to take us months and years to think about, contemplate, and write about.
Professor Shibli Talhami is Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
When we come back, a closer look at Egypt's relationship with the United States. We're waiting to hear from Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, who's expected to speak to the crowds in Tahrir Square any moment. Stay with us. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington, where we are watching events unfold in Cairo. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak is expected to speak to his people soon, and there are conflicting reports that he may resign. We're joined here in Studio 3A by Lauren Jenkins, NPR's senior foreign editor, and Rachel Martin, NPR national security correspondent. We also have with us here Michelle Dunn. She's a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace, and she's a specialist on Mideast affairs. She worked at the Department of State and at the White House. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Describe the balancing act that the U.S. has been executing over the last few days as they watch this unfold.
For the United States, obviously there's a long and deep relationship with the Egyptian government and a lot of interests there, diplomatic, military, security. But also the administration has had to have an ear to voices from elsewhere in the region, from other Arab leaders, from Israel, who've expressed a lot of concerns about what's going on in Cairo, and yet at the same time try to communicate a message to the Egyptian government on one hand and the Egyptian protesters. It's been a real balancing act, and frankly, I think we've seen a lot of zigs and zags in the message coming out of the administration over the last couple of weeks.
I've heard one official say, we want to stand behind democracy wherever it starts, but we also don't want to send a message to other world leaders that we're only behind you as long as you're in power.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, they've certainly gotten the message from other leaders that it's sort of unseemly to be seen as just dumping Mubarak unceremoniously after decades of friendship. But at the same time, the administration said right from the beginning that the demonstrators' demands were legitimate. And I think they've also been clear that the things that President Mubarak and Vice President Suleiman have offered so far have not met those demands.
What did you make of President Obama's statement in Michigan today, where at the beginning of a speech about broadband access, he said, we'll stand behind the push for democracy in Egypt?
Yeah, I think his message today really was aimed mostly at Egypt itself. He wanted to send a message of support to the peaceful demonstrators, and he used the word genuine, a transition to genuine democracy, which is a little bit of a modification of what he's been saying, but clearly, you know, showing some concern that what we could be moving toward here is some kind of a military coup that doesn't end in democracy. And that word genuine, I think, was also aimed at whoever's going to be taking power here in Egypt.
Rachel Martin, you're here with us in the studio, and I understand you've been talking to people in the U.S. intelligence community about contact with Egypt. What are you hearing from them?
Well, interesting. You know, we've been discussing whether or not the protesters would be satisfied if President Mubarak, as he is now reportedly going to do, comes out and says that Omar Suleiman, his vice president, would assume presidential control, at least for the time being, and whether or not that would assuage the protesters' concerns. The U.S. has a complicated relationship with Omar Suleiman. He was the head of Egyptian intelligence in a very complicated time in U.S.-Egyptian history and relations. He was very closely linked to the CIA's Extraordinary Rendition Program. And when I talk to intelligence officials in this country, they say that he is an extraordinary friend to the United States. I spoke with General Michael Hayden, who's a former director of the CIA under the Bush administration, and he said, we have an expression for people like Omar Suleiman. We always said that we have time for people like him. We always had a lot of time for Omar Suleiman. When he calls, we take his call. So this is not, this is a complicated issue for U.S. intelligence operations in the region. They have developed close links with the regime when it comes to fighting al-Qaeda. And it is unclear at this point how they start to distance themselves as they see the popular discontent with that choice if he is to assume power.
Yeah, Lauren Jenkins, our senior foreign editor.
Michelle, isn't it clear that we basically, as a nation, have very little power to influence events in Egypt and elsewhere these days? It seems that, and I think the Obama regime, presidency has said this, that basically it's up to the Egyptians, and this is an Egyptian upheaval, and they have to resolve it for themselves, and there's not a lot of levers we can pull.
I think the Obama administration definitely has wanted to say this is a choice for Egyptians. We're not making a choice for you. And yet, I find people in Egypt sort of hanging on every word.
that comes out of the White House and out of the State Department. Now, why is that if we don't have any influence there? The demonstrators and people I either talk to or follow through the Egyptian media have been saying, you know, we want a better message of support out of the United States. We're getting confused or a mixed message. And we've also seen Egyptian officials reacting to a strong negative reaction from the Egyptian foreign minister. So I would say that while the United States is definitely not controlling or, you know, kind of moving the chess pieces here in Egypt, that it still seems we have significant significant influence there.
Michelle Dunn, how does it complicate things that, you know, when we look at analogous situations in other countries, there's generally an opposition leader, and in Egypt there isn't?
Yeah, that's right. And the Egyptian government was careful to make sure there wouldn't be a unified leader of the opposition that would emerge in recent years. Yeah, that has made it a complicated situation. And actually, we see sort of new opposition movements emerging in Egypt through these protests. That's not an unusual thing to expect in a situation of kind of a mass uprising like this. So we have some older opposition organizations, some of which I think are quickly being left behind, some of which, like the Muslim Brotherhood, are still relevant to this situation. And we have newer opposition organizations, these youth groups, Mohamed El-Baradei's National Association for Change, the April 6th youth movement that's existed for a couple of years, that are becoming newly relevant. And they're kind of struggling here to put forward leaders. We've started to see some new names emerge in recent days, Wael Ghanem, of course, and others. And there's an attempt to pull
them
together.
I'm just going to interrupt you. We're about to hear from President Hosni Mubarak in Egypt.
I address my speech today to the youth of Egypt in Tahrir Square and all of its grounds. I speak to you from the heart. I speak to you to the children of Egypt. I speak to you because you are a new generation in Egypt that asks for a better Egypt and builds for its future. I say to you before I say anything that your martyrs and those that have been hurt were not hurt for nothing. And know that I will not shy away from bringing to justice those who were responsible. They will be punished. And I tell the family of those martyrs that I too have felt the pain, just as if you have felt. And my heart has hurt, just as your heart has hurt. I say to you, my answers to your calls and your prayers is to stand fast and not return. And I have looked and understood everything that you have said. And I am steadfast in meeting those demands. You, of course, are looking for honesty. Your demands are just. Mistakes are apparent in any political system in any country. But what's important is owning up to our mistakes and fixing our mistakes and holding responsible those who need to be held responsible. And I tell you, as president of the country, I will not shy away from listening to the youth of my country, but I will not. I will not accept any advice that comes from outside, from wherever it comes, or for whatever reasons. The youth of Egypt, my fellow citizens. I have explained myself and placed plans that do not require discussion. What I have given to this country in the past 60 years in war and in peace, I worked then, and now I say, I will be responsible for changing the Constitution and be responsible for the people until the elections of September, where there will be a free and fair election and the people can pick who they want to rule. Therefore, this is the promise that I have promised. This is the swear that I have sworn, and I will protect it until Egypt is back into safety. I have been in discussions about how to get out of this situation and have tried to meet the demands based on the Constitution and in a way that will keep the stability of our society and our youth. And therefore now,
بين كافة قوى المجتمع وبأقصى قدر من الصدق والشفافية.
We are discussing a transfer of power.
ملتزماً بمسؤوليتي.
And I presented this idea in order to get this country out of the crisis it is in.
بل ساعة بساعة.
And I am watching minute by minute. And I'm very careful about what happens next to Egypt and its people. And the protection that will now come from the military.
The
youth of Egypt have got together and asked for change and for a relief of the political regime. And I have agreed to bring our political minds together to come up with a solution and to come up with a solution and to come up with a clear plan and a timeline of these change. Day by day we come closer to a transfer of power. This national dialogue is now given to a constitutional committee that is studying the changes that have been requested in the Constitution. As has a committee been established to ensure that those promises I've given come through. And I have promised that the people that make up these committees are the intellectuals and specialists that are known in the country. But even though we have had martyrs die in the events of the past few days, and I have sent out orders for an investigation to start immediately of what happened last week in the upheaval, and have given this investigation to the Vice President. And I have started with the committee that I have started to study the changes in the Constitution that have been asked for. And I, based on what the committee has discussed, based on Amendment 189, and therefore I have asked for the changes in Constitutional Amendments 76, 77, 189. I missed one. I can't remember it. Okay. And getting prepared for an immediate changes that are agreed upon by this committee. These changes are our first concern, the changes in the presidential elections. They will also put in place a specific time period for a presidential elections. And there will also be amendments to change the way that people in the parliament are elected into power and continue into power. So the Constitution must balance between the fear of terrorism and protection of the freedoms and rights of all our people. Particularly using the emergency law. That is, but we are considering repealing the emergency law. My citizens, we have lost trust between us and our people, and we have lost trust in the process of change that we have begun. For Egypt is now seeing difficult times. We cannot continue like this. For our economy and our society are seeing losses day by day. And we are now seeing changes that those youth that are calling for these changes are seeing the consequences of first. For these changes have nothing to do with specific people or with Hosni Mubarak. These changes are for Egypt. Therefore, it is our duty to continue the dialogue that we have begun without a conflict between groups. For now, we will bring back to the streets of Egypt its daily activities and bridge trust between the people. I was once a young man, just as the young men are in the Tahrir Square, and I learned what it means to be a nationalist and sacrifice for my country. I defended my country. I entered its wars with its losses and its wins. I lived the days of freedom and colonialism, the happiest day of my life was when I put the Egyptian flag on the Sinai Peninsula, and other days like this. I will not bend to foreign pressure. I have done for the security and stability.
You're listening to Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak speaking through a translator at ABC News here in the United States. This is special coverage from NPR News.
may know that I will work every day for my country. We are now in difficult situation, and we are at a turning point, a moment in history. We must now look at the overall security and safety of our country, and that must be our first consideration.
So,
I have seen the Vice President discuss the changes that might come in the Constitution. I know that the will of its people will not be broken, that it will stand on its two feet honestly for all its children. We will prove we are Egyptian. Our strength is in the outspokenness of our people. We will not take advice from anyone, and no one will shape our decisions except for those in the streets and from the requests of our youth. The unity and determination of its people, it's our nationalism, this is our gem, our country that we have been with for more than 7,000 years. I have promised, this is the swear that I have sworn, and I will protect it until Egypt is back into safety. I have been in discussions about how to get out of this situation and have tried to meet the demands based on the Constitution and in a way that will keep the stability of our society and our youth. And therefore now, we are discussing a transfer of power, and I presented this idea in order to get this country out of the crisis it is in. And I am watching minute by minute, and I'm very careful about what happens next to Egypt and its people. And the protection that will now come from the military. The youth of Egypt have got together and asked for change and for a relief of the political regime. And I have agreed to bring our political minds together to come up with a solution and to come up with a solution and to come up with a clear plan and a timeline of these change. Day by day we come closer to a transfer of power. This national dialogue is now given to a constitutional committee that is studying the changes that have been requested in the Constitution. As has a committee been established to ensure that those promises I've given come through. And I have promised that the people that make up these committees are the intellectuals and specialists that are known in the country. But even though we have had martyrs die in the events of the past few days, and I have sent out orders for an investigation to start immediately of what happened last week in the upheaval, and have given this investigation to the Vice President. And I have started with the committee that I have started to study the changes in the Constitution that have been asked for. And I, based on what the committee has discussed, based on Amendment 189, and therefore I have asked for the changes in constitutional amendments 76, 77, 189. I missed one, I can't remember it. Okay. And getting prepared for an immediate changes that are agreed upon by this committee. These changes are our first concern, the changes in the presidential elections. They will also put in place a specific time period for a presidential elections. And there will also be amendments to change the way that people in the parliament are elected into power and continue into power. So the Constitution must balance between the fear of terrorism and protection of the freedoms and rights of all our people. Particularly using the emergency law. We are considering repealing the emergency law. My citizens, we have lost trust between us and our people, and we have lost trust in the process of change that we have begun. For Egypt is now seeing difficult times. We cannot continue like this. For our economy and our society are seeing losses day by day, and we are now seeing changes that those youth that are calling for these changes are seeing the consequences of first. For these changes have nothing to do with specific people or with Hosni Mubarak. These changes are for Egypt. Therefore, it is our duty to continue the dialogue that we have begun without a conflict between groups. For now, we will bring back to the streets of Egypt its daily activities and bridge trust between the people. I was once a young man, just as the young men are in the Tahrir Square, and I learned what it means to be a nationalist and sacrifice for my country. I defended my country. I entered its wars with its losses and its wins. I lived the days of freedom and colonialism, the happiest day of my life was when I put the Egyptian flag on the Sinai Peninsula, and other days like this. I will not bend to foreign pressure. I have done for the security and stability.
You're listening to Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak speaking through a translator at ABC News here in the United States. This is special coverage from NPR News.
They know that I will work every day for my country. We are now in difficult situation. And we are at a turning point, a moment in history. We must now look at the overall security and safety of our country, and that must be our first consideration.
So,
I have seen the Vice President discuss the changes that might come in the Constitution. I know that the will of its people will not be broken, that it will stand on its two feet honestly for all its children. We will prove we are Egyptian. Our strength is in the outspokenness of our people. We will not take advice from anyone, and no one will shape our decisions except for those in the streets and from the requests of our youth. The unity and determination of its people, it's our nationalism, this is our gem, our country that we have been with for more than 7,000 years. This is the soul of Egypt that will live in us as long as there are Egyptian people, from the peasants to the intellectuals. It will remain in our Muslim leaders, our young people, our Muslims and our Christians, and in the minds and hearts of any of all of the children that will be born after. I say again, I've lived for this country, protecting its securities, and Egypt will be the one that remains above people and above societies. It will remain until I give up my presidential powers. It will remain a great country that will not leave me, and I will not leave it. And it will remain a proud people, head held high, filled with pride and joy. May God protect Egypt and its people and set them on a straight path.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We've just heard Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak tell the Egyptian people that he will not be stepping down immediately. Contrary to reports that we heard earlier in the day, Mubarak says he will stay on until the elections in September. Still with us here in the studio are NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins and NPR national security correspondent Rachel Martin. First, we're going to go to our foreign correspondent Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, who is with the protesters in Cairo. Soraya, thanks for joining us again.
Sure.
Just half an hour ago, you were telling us the mood there was jubilant. What is it like now that people have heard from the president?
Very angry, very angry. In fact, during his speech when he was talking about planting the flag in Sinai, that being his proud moment, they started screaming illegal, void, invalid. I mean, the same sort of pleas and cries and chants that they've been doing for the past 2 weeks. This crowd is very, very angry tonight, and they are chanting in unison that they want this man to step down.
So what do they do next? They just stay and stay and stay?
Well, tomorrow is supposed to be, or the calls have gone out for this to be yet the largest, I mean, the largest demonstration yet. I mean, we've heard that a lot, and we've seen these crowds increase. They're, in fact, planning to take this outside of Tahrir Square to various squares in Cairo and then basically march back to the center here. So I think tomorrow, depending on what the military does or the, we don't see many police forces, but if they, for some reason, show up again, I mean, it could be a problem, but people will not settle. They're very determined, and you can just hear them in the background now. They are very determined to see this through, and they will not accept President Mubarak staying in power.
Will you hold up your phone a moment so we can hear the sound of the
sure.
crowds there? These are the crowds in Tahrir Square. All right, we're talking with NPR Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson, who is with the protesters there in Tahrir Square. Soraya, let us see it through your eyes. What's in front of you right now? What's the scene that you're witnessing?
Well, I'm overlooking the square. I'm not actually down in it, or we couldn't have a conversation. It's so loud. But it's just packed with people. There are a lot of flash bulbs going off, people taking pictures. I should say that the speech that Mr. Mubarak gave was broadcast in the square. And again, during that process, they were shouting and very angry about what he had to say. They do not accept that this man has served, as he said, 60 years for his country. They want him to go. At least this crowd in the square is determined to see him go.
You know, Soraya, the speech began with a sort of preamble where he said, I'm speaking to the youth of Cairo, the youth of Egypt, as a parent speaks to his children. Was there a moment as the speech unfolded that people started to realize that Mubarak was not, in fact, stepping down, and this was not the speech they expected? And was there some sort of an audible reaction from the crowd?
I think it was the point where he was talking about that he had a responsibility to continue to oversee this constitutional reform process, that he would keep his promise, that he would not bow to outside forces. It was around that time where the chants started. Now the chants have changed again. It's leave, leave, Mubarak, leave. But this is a common one that we've heard. And again, it's very angry.
That's NPR Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson, our foreign correspondent, speaking with us from Cairo. Thanks, Soraya.
You're welcome.
And still here in the studio with us are NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins and NPR national security correspondent Rachel Martin. Lauren, this was not the speech that everyone was expecting. What stood out to you about it?
Well, it stood out to me that he made really very few concessions at all. We'd heard various things that he would either step down or he might step aside. He might let the army take over in a caretaker government. He might turn over power to his vice president, Suleiman. He did none of those things. All he did, he says, well, we're going to take some more measures of reform, and I'm going to stay around until September to preside over them. I call it a typical Mubarak Egyptian political rope-a-dope. They bob and weave, and you know, as the crowd builds up, he's got to throw something at him. He throws some minor bones of, you know, we might. But the key issue among many of them there is the emergency law, which is the equivalent of martial law, which allows nothing. Vice President Biden has been pushing this. The U.S. government has been pushing this. Is at least show us something tangible. Lift the emergency law that would allow these demonstrations to be legal. Right now, they're all illegal. He didn't even raise that up.
NPR National Security Correspondent Rachel Martin.
And you know what was interesting to me, Ari? He almost put the blame on the protesters. He said that collectively everyone has lost trust in the process of change that I am trying to implement. And essentially that's a message that you need to believe me, trust me, that we're going to lay the foundation for these democratic changes, but you need to go home. And he was almost patronizing at a point when he said, I know what it's like to be a young man. I've been in squares. I've sacrificed for my country. Trying to fill that fatherly role in and almost kind of with a tin ear to the fact that these people have decided they don't want him as their father anymore.
So, Lauren, Rachel, it sounds from speaking to Soraya and seeing the images that these crowds are not about to go home, and the jubilation has turned to anger. What are the possible breaking points here? How long can this continue?
Well, that's a really interesting question. The crowds have been growing bigger. In the last couple of days, it's moved from street demonstrations into strikes, especially strikes against national state offices and state industries, strikes on the Suez Canal, which is vital. This is all building up, and it's crashing the economy. Clearly, they've called for Friday is the traditional big prayer day. That's tomorrow. They've called for bigger crowds than they've ever had. It's going to grow. The question is, what will the government do? Are they going to try and stop it? The only way to stop it is for the army to intervene, which up to now they've said they wouldn't. But after today, they seem to be backing Mubarak and not the people.
Although earlier today, Rachel, we heard from the military that they were moving to grant the people's wishes. So what is their role here?
We talked a little earlier about the factions that are developing within the military. I think we might see more of those factions and the lines being calcified. As we noted, this is a conscription force. Everyone knows someone who has served, and it's a politically diverse force. We talk about the generals at the upper echelons, very, very tightly linked to Mubarak, who promoted them through the ranks. But you work your way down through the ranks, and this is a cross section of Egyptian population. These are people who are aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, who are aligned with other opposition parties, maybe not publicly, but it's going to be interesting to see how those. Parts of the army decide to move. In 1952, the revolution that unseated King Farouk, that was a colonel's revolution. We haven't seen how the colonels are going to move.
We're joined again now by Shibli Talhami, a professor from the University of Maryland who is joining us from his home. And Professor Talhami, when we spoke with you a few moments ago, we were expecting to hear Hosni Mubarak resign. We've now heard from him saying that he will not. What's your immediate reaction to this speech?
You know, it's interesting. I've been obviously listening to the crowds all day long and live coverage that's nonstop on Arab satellites and seeing what the public sentiment is and hearing what people want from left to right. And it's as if this president is living in his own world. It's almost reminiscent of the kind of speech that he gave at the beginning of the whole uprising, in which he really didn't get what people were up to, that things are changing so rapidly. Now, he announced some important things. Again, they would have mattered a lot if they were last week, but he's like two steps and 2 days behind all the time. And so what we heard is very important things, such as the constitutional changes that people have been asking for, that he's requested them. He gave no indication that he's going to remove the emergency law anytime soon. He said this will put us on a route for changing for removing the emergency law. He said he's transferring the powers to the vice president. It's not clear what that means while he remains president. He didn't talk about his role at all, and it certainly isn't at all what the public has been asking for in terms of his immediate departure.
Well, I also heard a lot of hedging words. He said a constitutional committee will be studying the proposed changes to the Constitution. He said, I will be responsible for changing the Constitution. None of that seemed like a guarantee of any real change at all to me.
Well, he was talking, of course, about changes beyond the ones that he particularly, number 76 and 77, the ones that have been talked about as limiting who can run for president and the terms of the presidency. He was talking about additional changes in writings. Obviously, at some point, you're going to have a committee. But to imagine that the public in this environment, the opposition in this environment, going to trust him to do that is unimaginable. And I think that this is really going to unfold something in the next hours. I wouldn't say days, in the next hours, because I think there are expectations of huge demonstrations tomorrow, maybe the largest of all over Egypt. Today, the description of the mood in the Arab press is, this is the first revolutionary mood on the street. With all the uprisings in the past, people had not sat back to analyze it. So there's something much bigger going on. And I think, frankly, when you hear the speech and you heard
the military communique that was issued a few hours before, which indicated that the military has gone into a different mode, perhaps reminiscent of the days when there were military coups. And then you hear this, which is completely detached from what the military did, and you see that his speech was delayed by almost 45 minutes from the time he was supposed to give it. You have to wonder whether there's some disagreements inside right now, whether there is some trouble brewing behind the scenes. It's going to be known very quickly, because I think this is not going to stop the public demonstrations tomorrow.
All right, that's Professor Shibley Talhami from the University of Maryland. He's also a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now I want to return to our NPR senior foreign editor, Lauren Jenkins. Lauren, you mentioned the economic turmoil that this has thrown Egypt into. How much longer can that continue? Not till September, clearly.
Clearly not till September. Who knows where's the breaking point? The major earner of the economy is tourism, and that's been dead now for going on, a large part of a month. Now, if they start going on strikes, other industries are going to shut down. The banks have been closed. They tried to reopen them at the beginning of the week. People are suffering all along. They can't find the food. They're not getting their salaries. The government's not getting its income from tourism, income that they need to pay the troops, the soldiers. At some point, that will start affecting the army. If they can't pay the salaries, who knows what can happen?
And Rachel, you've been closely following the role of the army and the military. Does President Mubarak's failure to step down today put more pressure on the army to be something more than just a buffer between the protesters and the government?
I think it does. And it bears repeating that the army likes to think of itself as the protector of the state, not the guarantor of a certain political regime. And as we see this unfold, if the crowds start to get violent, if there starts to become this sense of instability, the army might have to step in.
We're hearing a bit of sound now from those crowds in Tahrir Square. You can hear the anger that our colleague Soraya Sarhadi Nelson was describing at learning that President Mubarak will not, as expected, step down. Angry crowds protesting in Tahrir Square in Cairo. Lauren, we have talked about how these protests have been peaceful up until now. Could this possibly be a turning point?
I think it will depend on how the government reacts. I think if the government tries to push these people back home out of the streets, I mean, they may, who knows how many there are. It's impossible to count. There are hundreds of thousands for sure. There could be violence. I think if someone tries to quell them and say, you've got to go home, it's over. The situation has changed so much. No one's going to accept that.
It's worth just remembering that just hours ago, General Hassan al-Rouhi in the square said, "We hear you, and what you are asking for, you will get." So it's really a remarkable turn of events, and that statement illustrates we could be seeing a fracturing in the military leadership, even not just among the ranks, rank and file, but even within the officer corps. We might start to see some partitioning.
Yeah. Lauren, give us a sense of Hosni Mubarak himself when you hear such a resounding message from the people in the military, and then you hear him come out and deliver a speech that is so out of sync with that message. What do you know of his personality, his psychology, that might inform what's going on right now?
Well, I don't know how much it's particular to him. It's particular to most despots. People who stay in power with ultimate power ultimately lose contact with the people they're ruling. They become a separate class. They live in a cocoon of their own making. I think that's what we're witnessing. Here's a man, he's 82. He's been in power 30 years. Russian trained. He was a Russian trained pilot, became head of the Egyptian Air Force before he was made vice president by Sadat and then inherited the mantle of the Rais, as they call the president, when Sadat was killed. I think it's a man who's lost touch.
And the way he couched the speech, "I'm doing it for you. I'm speaking like a parent to his children. This is not about me," also sounds very consistent with what you're describing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was very condescending. I mean, to look at this crowd and say, I hear you, I respect you, you're the youth, you're the future and all of that, but now let Daddy tell you what it's going to be. And I'm not leaving, I'm going to stay here and guide your education.
Stay with us. After a huge day of buildup in Cairo, we have finally heard from Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, who has told the now furious crowds in Tahrir Square that he will not be resigning until the elections in September. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro. You're hearing the sounds of furious chanters in Tahrir Square in Cairo who have just learned that President Hosni Mubarak will not be stepping down immediately. After hours of waiting, he spoke to the people of Egypt and said he plans to remain in power until September. Still with us in the studio are NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins and national security correspondent Rachel Martin. We're also joined again by Michelle Dunn, a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace, who is a specialist on Mideast affairs at the Department of State and at the White House. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Having now heard the speech from Hosni Mubarak, what's your reaction?
Well, I'm very worried about what's going to happen. I really am afraid that things are going to turn much uglier now in Egypt because Mubarak made a couple of very, very tiny minor concessions here, but nothing, of course, like the fundamental break with the past, which is what the demonstrators were looking for. And therefore, I'm afraid the demonstrations are going to escalate. At some point, the demonstrators have been talking about heading toward the presidential palace. That could put the Egyptian army under incredible stress, what to do, how to handle this situation. And that's the thing that I think people have been most worried about. You know, in that case, then there would be, a lot of pressure on the army to what to do, and there's concern that even if senior commanders issued orders on younger commanders to fire on the crowds, that they wouldn't. And, I hate to spell out, this is kind of a nightmare scenario, but that is how bad things could get.
We should remind people that tomorrow, Friday, marks the start of the weekend in Egypt. And so regardless of what President Mubarak said, there was an expectation that the crowds would get much, much bigger. And now that the tone has gone from jubilation to anger, it seems like a very, very tense moment.
Yes, it is. And it's very curious. I mean, we saw this communique from the Egyptian army from earlier today that said, we're going to take care of stability in the country. They seem to be teeing things up for, frankly, a coup of some kind. We haven't seen that happen. I suppose that could still happen. And we've also seen, for example, the state media kind of rebelled in the last couple of days. You're seeing what's looking like some disintegration of the system there in Egypt.
I just want for people who are not able to see this scene, we are watching images on TV of thousands of people streaming down the street in Tahrir Square. The crowds remain, but they are no longer jubilantly waving flags the way that CNN was showing them wave these flags just moments ago before the Egyptian president spoke. Michelle Dunn, talk about the role of the United States in all of this. Mubarak a couple of times said foreigners were not going to influence him. He was not going to listen to advice from outsiders. What is the U.S. role in this?
Mubarak and others, the foreign minister and so forth in Egypt, have tried to make this argument repeatedly that these demands for reform and change were coming from outside, that they were not authentically Egyptian. That argument just has no credibility anymore in Egypt. I think President Obama has been calling for a real transition. Today he said a genuine transition to democracy. He's been pretty consistent about that and consistent that what Mubarak and Suleiman have offered is far, far short of what the demonstrators' legitimate demands. This is really going to be very difficult for the United States to handle. And it's going to put more pressure on the U.S. administration to say explicitly Mubarak should go, something that they haven't wanted to do.
But doesn't that play directly into Mubarak's line that this is coordinated from the outside, from foreigners?
And that's one of many reasons why they haven't wanted to go there. They haven't wanted to go to that place. They have wanted to say it's the decision of the Egyptian people. But we are in favor of a transition to democracy.
I want to bring in now a reporter who is on the street in Cairo. We have Hannah Alam on the line. She's the Cairo bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers. We're actually about to get her on the line. We will bring her into the conversation just as soon as we have her, trying to reach her at this moment. But Lauren Jenkins, our foreign editor here in the studio, We earlier heard Shibli Talhami say, this is a day that if you're a Mideastern despot, you should be terrified. That was before President Mubarak said he was not going to resign. Does anything change now?
He's still a despot, and he hasn't resigned.
What about for the other Egyptian countries, though, and the people of those countries who are watching this unfold on television, on the radio, on the internet?
Well, I think if you're talking regionally, certainly a lot of other authoritarian leaders in the Arab world are going to be delighted about this. We have a correspondent in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, and she says they've been pushing the administration to stand by Mubarak and not support the opposition to him. I think a lot of, one could look at the rulers, the monarchs of Jordan, of the UAE, of Kuwait, all of these people, this is the common leadership in the Arab world, unfortunately. They're not democracies. They are led by a monarch or a dictator. And they seem happy to see Mubarak stay there because I believe if he was toppled by this popular revolt, they would all be quaking in their shoes because they'd be next.
If you're Egyptian-American and you're watching this unfold, we want to hear from you. Or if you have questions for our guests here in the studio, email us, TOTN@NPR.org, and we'll put your questions to some of our guests. We're going to go now to Hannah Allam, who is the Cairo bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers, and she joins us on the line from Cairo now. Hi, thanks for being with us.
Hi there, good evening.
What has the mood been since President Mubarak announced that he was not going to step down immediately?
Well, it was as if someone had flipped a switch. There was a turn from jubilation to fury in an instant. I was just out at Tahrir Square before the president spoke. People were getting their faces painted. They brought their children. They were really ready to witness what they thought would be a historic moment, a 17-day popular revolt that would bring down a 30-year-old authoritarian regime. And there was a big letdown.
I just want to let listeners know we do want to hear from you. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Hannah, here on the other side of the world, we're concerned about the possibility of violence. Does that feel like a real threat at this point?
There was a lot of anger in those crowds tonight, and I don't know. There were already, even before we'd heard these rumors that he would step down tonight, that there was going to be a real push tomorrow. Every Friday has sort of been an escalation after Friday prayers of the protest movement. This week we saw the labor, the workers really join in.
Sorry, you cut out a little bit there. I just want to restate that the labor community would join in, that workers would join the existing protests.
Right.
Sorry, go on.
Yes, so I we'll have to see after Friday prayers tomorrow, but I can't imagine that the protest movement, which now has lost a lot of people and picked up a lot of steam in the past week with the workers joining in, I can't imagine they're going to let this go easily. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see, because right now there's just a mood of confusion and just a big sense of a letdown among the crowds here.
Hannah, was there anyone specific in the crowd who you spoke with who said something memorable?
I just spoke with a university professor who was there with his two daughters, one 18 years old, one 13 years old, and he was saying he's so proud of the youth that his generation failed in changing Egypt, and one of his daughters interrupted and said, "This is our uprising," and he just smiled, and he said, "Yes, and these youth, they should be ministers in the next government. It's because of them we're seeing change," and then of course, minutes later, that change didn't come tonight.
Can you describe that moment in the speech when the crowd realized it was not the speech they were expecting?
I left right before the speech began, came home, saw the crowds in Tahrir on a split screen on TV, and, at some point when it became clear that he was not stepping down, even the television feed was drowned out by the crowds chanting, "Leave, leave, leave." They didn't want to hear any more about constitutional amendments or, some powers transferred to the vice president. They wanted to hear one thing, and that was his resignation.
All right. Well, Hannah Allam, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Hannah Allam is the Cairo bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers, and she joined us from Cairo. We're going to go now to Ahmad Shaheen, who is an associate professor of religion, conflict, and peace building at the University of Notre Dame's Kroc Institute for International Peace. He joins us on the cell phone from Cairo. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Professor Shaheen, can you hear us? I understand you're in the crowd in Tahrir Square.
Yes, I'm in Tahrir Square, in the middle of Tahrir Square right now.
Describe what you're seeing.
We
describe the scene.
30 minutes ago, or maybe 45 minutes ago, and actually we had to walk within a sea of people. There were at least a million people in the square, but they were getting ready to hear Mubarak's statement about the situation. And of course, after he was done, all of them, they raised their shoes.
They raised their shoes, you say?
I'm sorry?
They raised their shoes, a sign of insult.
Right. They raised the shoes, which was, is a sign of a grave insult to him. Of course, protesting because, they felt frustrated about his statement, and that fell short of the minimum of their demands.
We hear shouting behind you. What are the crowds saying?
They are saying that he's still undermining them. He's not taking them seriously. He's not getting their message, and they are not going to leave before he leaves. And they know what he's trying to do. They say that he's trying just to wear them down. That's exactly the comments that I heard afterwards. That he's trying to wear them down. He's playing games. Every few days he comes out and just says very little.
Professor Shaheen, just to recap, you were in the United States. You landed in Cairo a short time ago. You went from the airport to Tahrir Square. How does the experience of being there in person compare to what we are all watching on television?
I'm sorry, how what?
How does the experience of being there in person compare to what you and I and everyone else have been watching on television for 2 weeks now?
Of course, it's different. It's really different because you can see the people, just really in action. You can see the level of organization, which really was surprising. There is a high level of organization. The first impression I got, that they are completely in control of the square. You go through many, we went through three or four very polite young men inspecting us, searching us, but they were very polite and they were very efficient. Also, people offered us food as soon as we arrived. There is also a team that takes care of the garbage and so on. And of course, inside there is this feeling of a cooperation and solidarity and so on. So even people after they heard the statement, they immediately said, we are coming tomorrow. They are coming tomorrow really in masses in order to show the protest again.
It's really an exciting time for me. It sounds incredibly organized, checkpoints and food and cleanup crews. Can you see a military presence? What role is the army playing?
Yes, the military actually is also very polite. They are trying to avoid any kind of provocation or any kind of a direct physical clash or confrontation with the people. They are surrounding, of course, the square, but at some point, and then after the military, you go through the civilian teams that they are expecting, of course, they are looking for thugs. That's what they are concerned about, that, infiltrators, the thugs of Mubarak can get into the square and, of course, create, because they insist on the peaceful nature of these demonstrations.
Professor Ahmad Shaheen,
we
have heard concerns from our reporters in Cairo and from analysts here in Washington that things could take a turn for the worse tomorrow, that things could turn violent. Are you concerned about that? Does that feel like a possibility?
Well, we heard the statement early on from the military, statement number one, in which a military representative came out on television and he said that the military is going to be supportive of the people's demands, appreciate and understand the people's demands, and is supportive of these demands. That's it. They didn't say anything else.
Thank you, Professor Shaheen. We're going to go now to Vice President Suleiman, who is speaking live on television.
Okay.
Was successful in achieving certain democratic changes, and those changes have been made, and the decisions to change the constitution have been made, and the president has been committed to making these changes, as he said on February 1st. What the president has announced today further proves his nationalism and his dedication to the young people and his determination to help the youth of Egypt, as it shows his determination to move us through this time with security. My fellow citizens, national security is more important than anything else. The president has taken the responsibility. Okay, great.
We've been listening to Vice President Omar Suleiman speaking to the Egyptian people less than an hour after President Hosni Mubarak said he would not be immediately stepping down. The mood in Tahrir Square, we're told by our reporters there, has changed from jubilation to outrage and anger. Here in the studio, we have NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins, national security correspondent Rachel Martin, and we're also joined by Michelle Dunn, in the studio, who is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace and a Mideast affairs expert, formerly of the State Department and the White House. What's the message from Vice President Suleiman here, Michelle?
Well, from the brief bit we heard, he just seems to be, underlining what Mubarak said, associating himself with it, and saying, national security above all else.
You know, we know that Egypt receives a tremendous amount of aid from the U.S., and American officials from the White House spokesman on down have been reluctant to say they will withdraw aid if Mubarak does not step down, but they say our decisions about aid will depend on what the Egyptian government does. Is this a turning point in that respect?
The administration has not wanted to alienate the Egyptian army. Most of the aid, 1.3 out of the 1.5 billion annually, is military aid. And everyone has been sort of relying on the Egyptian military to deliver us from this situation, to do the right thing. It's clearly been seen that it would only be the military that could get Mubarak to step aside if they decided that that was the only way to restore stability to the country. So the administration has not wanted to do something that would appear to be targeted at the military. I think the thing that would change that would be if the military was clearly seen as using force against peaceful demonstrators. Again, that's a scenario we could see playing out if the demonstrators become more assertive. Not that the demonstrators would be using violence necessarily, but become more assertive in terms of wanting to march through the city to the presidential palace, etc.
We now have Vice President Omar Suleiman's translator back on the line. We're going to bring Vice President Omar Suleiman back in just for a couple more moments.
To the perils of chaos, and we cannot allow those perpetrating and plotting intimidation. Let's join hands and let's march forward in a path that will guarantee the realization of the demands and aspirations of the youth towards a peaceful, unsuspecting life where the love of the homeland is the top priority, for which we can...
That's Vice President Omar Suleiman underscoring the message from Hosni Mubarak that things must settle down before the current government leaves. Lauren and Rachel, we have a question here by email from H. Hansfield in Maryland, writing, "It's hard to believe the military would say the things they did earlier in the day, namely that Mubarak was going to step down, only to have Mubarak hang on. What are the chances this is all a face-saving for Mubarak negotiated ploy where he hangs in and, quote, forces a coup which was planned all along so he can later claim he was not forced to resign?"
Well, I think to suggest that there is some effort to make sure that President Mubarak is moving gracefully out is not without possibility.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News of the situation in Cairo where Hosni Mubarak says he will not step down immediately. This is special coverage. I'm Ari Shapiro. Welcome back. This is special coverage from NPR News of the situation in Cairo. I'm Ari Shapiro, joined here in the studio with NPR senior editor Lauren Jenkins and NPR national security correspondent Rachel Martin. Also, Michelle Dunn of the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace is here with us. And we just heard Vice President Omar Suleiman talking about the need to prevent chaos and the importance of national security. Lauren, what does that mean to you? What's the message he's sending?
Well, the message has been the one that Mubarak's always sent to the people, is it's either him representing stability, a la Mubarak, are chaos, and that if he wasn't there, there'd be chaos. And they've used this throughout his 30-year reign. He used it last week when he gave his last speech to the nation and said he was going to hang on at least until the elections were supposed to be held in September. It's reviving that. And last week, right after he said that, they sent out secret policemen and in civilian clothes and all of his supporters, gangs that were using firebombs and stones and iron bars to attack the peaceful demonstrators that had gathered in Tahrir. We had our first clash of violence, had 2 days of chaos, the sort of chaos that the administration of Mubarak seemed to want to make his point.
Michelle Dunn, that sounds pretty ominous.
Yes, it does. I mean, I think actually having Mubarak come and speak today was worse than having him not speak at all in terms of how it will inflame sentiment among the demonstrators and others. In a worst-case scenario, we could be headed toward a situation where they know they're going to inflame the demonstrators and that the demonstrators eventually are going to try some kind of more assertive moves, and maybe that will provide the excuse for a crackdown. And that's a very unhappy scenario.
And this happens as we expect the protests to grow dramatically with the beginning of the weekend tomorrow. We're going to bring into the conversation NPR's Deb Amos, our foreign correspondent in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. She's watching how Egypt's neighbors are absorbing this news. Hi, Deb. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
How closely are people in Riyadh following the events in Cairo?
Oh, very closely. I feel like I'm in a giant community. I can watch Twitter feeds, I can see blogs, and even talking to people. I'll do an interview, but people will want to go home because they want to watch television all night long. People here have been following this minute by minute, both among the leadership, but especially among the youth. Saudi Arabia has a bigger youth bulge even than Cairo. 80% of this country is under 40 years old.
Wow.
So this story has seized them like nothing else.
And Deb, do you feel that they want to recreate the scenes in Cairo in Riyadh? Is that the sentiment?
Not at all. Not at all. It's a different society. There are different pressures here. There is no organization like there is in Cairo. And also, this is a very rich government. Oil prices are up. There's a huge surplus in the budget. Where you see an interesting disconnect is between the young people who are excited by what they see on the streets in Cairo and King Abdullah at the head of this country, who is a close personal friend of Hosni Mubarak, who spoke directly to Mubarak, who said, you've got to stay where you are, who spoke to the U.S. president, who spoke to President Obama and said, you have to stop doing this now stuff on television. You need to give this man dignity. The Saudis at the very top of the government are not happy about what is happening. I think down lower among the younger princes, they understand that Mubarak has gone too far, that he has lost legitimacy. He is going to have to leave. I have been told that the Saudis have offered him a place to stay. I've also been told that the Saudis are shoring up the Jordanian government. As you know, King Abdullah there has reversed cuts on subsidies. That government cannot afford those kind of measures. They have huge deficits. And so to take those kind of measures, they're going to need outside money. The Saudis have been supplying it.
So, Deb, it sounds like real fear among the upper echelons of the Arab world that rulers may not be stable for as long as they had expected a few weeks ago they would be.
You know, I think they all know that this is not going to spread overnight. This is not that these systems don't work that way. However, you are seeing that they do understand people have become empowered by what they see on television. And people here are talking about something, and academics in the U.S. are talking about something called the Al Jazeera effect. You saw it in Tunis and you saw it in Egypt, that you feel that you might be able to do it here. We had today for the first time ever, somebody announced on the web that they had formed a political party. It was Islamists in the Kingdom. This was a religious party. You know, it is not legal to form a political party, but they just put it out there on the web. And when I called around to government officials, they said, well, I suppose you can do anything you want on the web. And so you see people taking measures that would have been unthinkable before both Tunis and Egypt.
All right. Thanks. That's NPR's Deborah Amos speaking with us from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Thanks, Deb.
Thanks, Ari.
And we're going to return now to Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, our foreign correspondent who is in Cairo and has been watching these dramatic events unfold all day. Welcome back, Soraya. Tell us where things stand at this moment.
Well, the anger that was palpable after Mr. Mubarak's speech has continued, especially after the vice president started speaking a while ago. He just wrapped up his call on these youth, the brave youth, as he said, for them to go home and start working.
You know, I have to wonder, do the president and vice president really expect that this will make things better, or could they be setting something up for the kind of crackdown that we saw a week or so ago?
Well, they didn't use, I mean, you have to always look at the language here and read between the lines, and it's so difficult to do anyway because it's in another language. But they didn't really say anything that we can ascertain, neither of them, that suggests the army will go in and crack down. They did say the army was securing the country and was there to ensure stability and chaos, but the language being used about the protesters, you know, calling them brave youth and all that, does not suggest that they're actually going to go in and do that tomorrow. Having said that, it's unclear if tomorrow gets out of control. I mean, the word chaos was also raised several times, and they just don't want that. The leadership just sort of sees this as chaos, even though they're trying, their concession, I guess, if you will, is that they're making more flowery language and calling the youth, you know, sort of heroes and brave and that sort of thing.
And tell me about the role of the army. Is there confidence that the army can keep the peace and prevent chaos from breaking out?
Well, certainly at this point, the protesters feel favorably, not just the protesters, but everybody in this country feels favorably disposed toward the army. It's just unclear, you know, what role they take tomorrow, whether that would change. I mean, I think it would take some doing, but there doesn't seem to be any indication of the army moving positions. On the other hand, I'm not seeing from where I am, the crowds are certainly not spilling back. I mean, there have been reports, you know, that they're moving toward the television building, that sort of thing, but I don't see them moving in any other direction. So I think tomorrow is the day that we're going to see people moving more across Cairo to object to this these pronouncements that were made tonight. I mean, that's what's being called for anyway by the protesters.
All right. Thanks, Soraya.
You're welcome.
That's NPR Soraya Sarhadi Nelson speaking with us from Cairo. We asked earlier in the hour for you to email your questions to us, and we have one here from Tim in Oceanside, California. He asks, given the earlier reports today, both of Mubarak resigning and of some sort of military takeover, is it possible that behind the scenes, during the delay before Mubarak spoke, that he argued for and got one last chance to convince the protesters that he should stay and oversee the transition to the next election? Speculation about what happened behind the scenes before President Mubarak spoke, and he did speak about 45 minutes later than he was scheduled to. Lauren Jenkins?
It's anybody's guess what really went on in those.
Would you like to be a fly on that wall?
Meeting. I'd love to be a fly on that wall.
Well, we
but
know.
I think certainly that there is a disconnect here. The army said something this morning. I mean, they said all told the demonstrators. The commander of Cairo went to the square and said, "All of your demands will be met tonight." They haven't been met, so something is happening. You know, they don't seem to be.
So, Rachel, this morning there was this prominent meeting where the president and vice president notably were not invited, and then the military had this announcement. What happened between then and now?
You know, it felt very much like the military was saying, this is a new chapter. We're going to do this slowly, but get ready for change. And then, as Lauren indicated, there were some really explicit statements that Mubarak was going to step down. So all we can really do from here at this point is to try to make educated guesses. But as we've been talking about, there are factions within the Egyptian army. The generals very close to Mubarak. It is in their interest to see him stick around. At the same time, they see these people on the streets. They understand that lower down the ranks, there are people who are politically diverse, who are not wed to Mubarak professionally as they are. And they're putting their finger up in the wind. And they're seeing and measuring which way the wind's blowing. And at one point, Mubarak might be too much of a liability. And they'll have to make a choice.
Michelle Dunn, you have worked on Mideast issues at the State Department and the White House. If the President of the United States turned to you at this moment and said, okay, he didn't step down. Now what do I do? What's your answer?
You know, I think they have to continue to, first of all, to send the warnings that they have been sending directly to the Egyptian military. Do not use force against the demonstrators. There were very clear and strong warnings a week ago today, last Thursday, because of the fear of a very large demonstration last Friday. And I think those worked. We saw the Egyptian army actually behaving much better last Friday than they had on Wednesday and Thursday. My guess would be that's sort of the first thing to do right now is to go out with those warnings again, and also to kind of keep the communication with the army about, you know, you need to do the right thing here. You need to restore stability to the country. I agree. It's very confusing. The military sent out some very different signals early today, and it really makes you wonder whether there was either a last-minute change of plans, whether Mubarak didn't say what they thought he was going to say, or whether, whether there are some kind of divisions and lack of understanding, you know, inside the regime at this point.
I just want to describe what we're seeing on television, where CNN is showing enormous crowds marching down the street with an Egyptian flag that is many, 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 many people long, people waving that flag, waving smaller flags in the air, feeling a strong sense of nationalism despite their opposition to the government. Joining us now from Vancouver, Canada, is Tamer Mustafa. He's an associate professor at the Simon Fraser University School for International Studies in Vancouver. He focuses on religion, politics, and law in the Middle East. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So as you watched Hosni Mubarak's speech just now saying that he will not resign immediately, what was your immediate reaction?
Well, I know that it's very disappointing for a lot of people, and that's definitely understandable. But there is a silver lining that I think we need to keep in mind. If Hosni Mubarak were to have stepped down and resigned completely today, what it would have done is it would have triggered new presidential elections. And it would have triggered new presidential elections under the current rules on the book, according to the current constitution, which the regime has basically gamed to reproduce itself. So the silver lining that we have in him not stepping down right now is that he is still able to, pressure can still be applied on him to make amendments to the Constitution.
So you're saying these constitutional changes actually could help the transition. What are the specific aspects that you think could improve the situation?
That's right. So, as I said, that if Mubarak is still in office, he's able to call for a national referendum to change articles to the Constitution, and then we can see the very troublesome articles that are basically keeping the regime in power altered, and then we can see facilitate some kind of a clean election process, but. If he was to have stepped down tonight, we would have basically seen an automatic triggering of elections under the old rules, which would have basically just maintained the same system. So it wasn't a great thing that we saw today, but there is a silver lining in terms of keeping the door open to essentially reforming the election system within the current constitutional framework.
Just to review what President Mubarak said in his speech about the constitutional changes, he said he would be setting up a constitutional committee to study proposed changes. That committee would consist of intellectuals and specialists. He said, "I will be responsible for changing the constitution." But after so much talk, Professor Mustafa, how much of this can people have confidence in?
Well, I think that's where it's the pressure that the protesters are able to bring to bear is absolutely critical. That pressure needs to be maintained and ratcheted up if there's going to be any more concessions coming from the regime.
Ratcheted up how?
Excuse me?
Ratcheted up how?
Well, I mean they're already ratcheting it up, and the regime is being worn down right now by the protesters. It's important to note that this presidential committee has already been formed, and the makeup of the committee is somewhat mixed. There are some on the committee that are clearly sort of pro-regime people, but there are also, for example, two very much outspoken, very high-profile reformist judges that are on the committee by the name of Ahmed Mekki, and then another judge by the name of Bastawisi, who were leaders of a pro-reform movement several years back. So there is hope that on this constitutional amendment committee, we will see, you know, voices really pushing for change. And of course, the outside context in terms of the ongoing protests will be really crucial to get concrete concessions out of the regime.
Tamer Mustafa is an associate professor at the Simon Fraser University School for International Studies in Vancouver, Canada. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And Michelle Dunn, as he was talking just then, I saw you nodding your head. Is there real hope for positive change despite President Mubarak's refusal to step down immediately?
Well, I was nodding my head when Tamer was saying that there were credible figures on this constitutional committee, that it has already been formed, and that they've named the articles of the Constitution that they're going to look at, and they are indeed the articles that are very much controversial in Egypt. But I would differ a little bit with Tamer's assessment of the situation, because I think that Mubarak easily tonight could have taken a number of steps before, for example, resigning his powers. I don't really accept this argument that the Egyptian constitution is sacrosanct and that Mubarak must remain in office or Egypt would be forced into snap elections. I really don't think that's true. I think that Mubarak could sponsor amendments to the constitution before he left office. It's also possible for a third of the parliament to sponsor amendments to the constitution. So if there's political will to amend the constitution, there would be a way to do it. And if there's political will to postpone elections a bit, say 6 to 12 months instead of 60 days, there would be ways to do that. Unfortunately, Mubarak just keeps making promises that he'll do these things, but without taking the immediate steps that would give people confidence that it's really happening.
Rachel, before we have to say goodbye, in the next few days, is there a chance for the military to push this in the direction that the people want it to go?
There is. They hold a lot of power right now, and they could do two things. Either President Mubarak and his regime could order them to break up the protests, and that could turn violent, or the protesters themselves could start to get violent, in which case the army would be in a very precarious situation, finding themselves at the protectorate of the state, trying to decide whether or not to stop them or to just stand back and let the revolution unfold.
Lauren, do you think this is heading for a resolution within the next few days?
I don't think so. I think it's a big standoff. I think something has to break. I don't think it's going to go gently or easily. This is a revolution. I think it's a resolution. Revolutions are never constitutional. They're about changing constitutions. The Egyptian constitution has been crafted purely to keep this regime in power and not let anyone else have a say in it. What the people are demanding is that changes, and changes totally.
Well, I want to thank our guests and our listeners for joining us for these dramatic 2 hours as the situation in Egypt has unfolded. We were expecting President Hosni Mubarak to say he would be stepping down immediately. As we all know, he came on the television, and that is not what he said. He pledged to remain in power until September. The mood in Tahrir Square changed from jubilation to anger. Masses of protesters continue to crowd the streets of Cairo, and we expect those crowds to grow tomorrow. We're going to continue monitoring the events in Egypt, so please stay with All Things Considered and NPR News for the latest. I want to thank Michelle Dunn, Senior Associate at the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace, a specialist on Mideast affairs who worked at the State Department and at the White House. Thanks for being with us. Also, Rachel Martin, NPR National Security Correspondent, and NPR Senior Foreign Editor Lauren Jenkins, who have been with us as this has all unfolded. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I'm Ari Shapiro, and you're listening to special coverage from NPR News.